Event to like together people who interested in pub and art show or something together. So yeah, maybe someone know Seven Peaks before, or maybe someone doesn't know. But yeah, I would like to introduce you about who we are. Like, so Seven Peaks, we are a software house agency, and we provide software and design to both local and global companies, customer. So yeah, welcome again, and excited to see you again here in person, because before that we have like online event, but now we are really excited to provide this webinar to you again to share about knowledge. And yeah, next, actually we have like online a Facebook or and website to share what about the update in 70s. You can follow up and like and share with 70. Yeah. And here we work hard and play harder. Actually, we have like many activities like playing together and have fun, make the moment together. Yeah, like a game and play game something in here in the office. And yeah, not only just eat and normally just play. We have a lot of buffet to enjoy eating together here as well. Like you see, you have like beer or many beverage behind. And yeah, so what I am like to share you that we are hiring position of this. Yeah, and yeah, you guys can like explore more on our website. Okay, and yeah, you can scan the QR code here to explore the next activities or next event next soon. So right now it's time to welcome our first speaker, Giorgio. Please feel my hand.
Please make clap your hands also for Fern. This was the first introduction in the conference. Can I ask my slide, please? Thanks. Okay, today I am here to bother you about develop security and compliances into the Azure cloud. First of all, let me present ourselves. This is the cloud and the backend team. Here there is the main people that is joining this team from a long time. We have the two new guy that is Min and Poo that we speak later. This is a bunch of our certification. Unfortunately, the slide is so small to present everything. So I try to arrange this beautiful presentation for you to show that who we are and who is speaking about. This is me, strange. I am Giorgio Desideri, and I'm working from 2006. Yes, I'm start old. It's 14 years old. On June of this year, and this is my certification, and I work in different roles in the IT projects and the IT industries. Okay, the agenda of today. First of all, starting to the first point in when you need to create and to be secure and compliant in Azure, the first thing that you need to have is an Azure account. I enter in some detail, some matter and subjects that you should know before to enter in this journey. And after, I drive you into the stepping through the identity. Is what is the main unit, the main block to build the security and the compliance in Azure. I give you some kind of tips and show some kind of scenarios about the database and the application. There is multiple. I choose database and application to be more generic and not go in the detail of the network, users, policy, and so on. There is the last one chapter before the conclusion about the framework and models that you can apply. So if you find something that you know are good. And at the end, the last chapter is about the conclusion. I try to give you some key point to bring you away from this meet. So I hopefully should be useful for you. Okay, start from the base. There's your account. First of all, according to my experience, you should understand what is your audience, who need to join in this Azure account. The project and product people, all the engineer department, the test manager, QA, and so on, who you have. The application, probably, you manage the customer and the user of your application into the Azure Active Directory. So you need to consider also them as your audience. There is someone that need to maintain all this game, all this playing around or playground, such as the support team, the operator that answer to the customer in a certain kind of case. So all these kind of people need to be able to access with the right permission to your Azure account. Okay, access methods here. Credential certificates probably is the most used one that allow the people to type their username or password or install the certificate to enter in the application, in the specific Azure portal page, whatever. MFA, the multi-factor authentication, the phone, and the an entrustment over the device. So, specific user can enter in the application, in the Azure account, in the specific portal page with their secret, their certificate, but with only this device. For example, a possible rule that to work you need to use your company laptop. To enter in this Azure account, you need to use your credential and the company laptop. This is a possible scenario that is need to be evaluated. Okay, this is the summary of the summary of the summary of the feature of the Azure Active Directory. A lot of hope. Just to give you the idea about the abstraction that I have to do in these eight rectangles. So in the Active Directory you have people, roles, application. I put hybrid to describe all the possible connection that you can have from your on-premise to your Azure account hosted in somewhere in the world. After, there is the device management, the domain service. Domain service is not the DNS, is not www.giorgiodesideri.me, what is the active domain service, probably is a bit more detailed, the identity governance, and the identity protection. I put the here down on the bottom of the slide the link to for the page of the official documentation to see all the possible features, all the possible usage that you can have with the Active Directory, the Azure Active Directory, and how you can put in security, okay, and compliance, your Azure account. Okay, the other resuming in bullet list. Here, starting from the top left, okay, I remember left because I have the watch. The price, the license. There is four layering of the license. Free, you pay what you consume. There is the join with the Office 365 or Microsoft 365. If you have already an account or a subscription over there, you can join easily. Otherwise, there is the Premium 1 and Premium 2, P1 and P2. Different are the services, different are the price, and different are the features that you can enable and use with different kind of quota source. Okay, identity governance is the ruling over the identity, about the, so we are speaking about the access policy, the password synchronization or reset, the scenario where you have you want to join the your user that you have on premise or in the other software as a service, for example, Salesforce, Office, okay, Office already knows, or another external Google, sorry, that you want connected to don't duplicate the user. There is the scope that is made and described later, so I skip a bit for now. The device government, what I introduced before, a certain kind of user, a group of user, can join to the application of the Azure account page with specific devices. So I need to keep also the list of the devices and manage the access also for them. Last, but not the least, is the alert and the reports. Something that if someone do something wrong or have a not authorized access, I want to know as soon as possible, just to evaluate that after if it's legitimate or not, this is another kind of discussion, but at least I know. When I speak about that, all the people, all the fantasy come to the movie. When there is unauthorized access, it's not like that. It's only one email or one call on the phone that you have. Okay, start with the identities. So, I turn to the other side of the screen. We can classify the identities, in four oblongs. User services, Azure services, I mean, your application, or my application, or, and my devices, or my organization devices. All these four can be regulated by roles or groups. A groups can be assigned or dynamic. The roles can be built-in. The Azure give you some default, some pre-build roles with the specific policy. Well, otherwise you can create yours. All of them relay on something that is called policy. Policy has a section that in metadata you find what you can do, over what you can do, and the specific action that you can do. Is what, where, what? I need to allow the people to have the login in the specific application. I can allow the specific service to connect in read only on this device, on these results. Or I need to join. This user can use only this device to access to this application or to monitor this service. Now the composition is belongs to you. Okay. In Active Directory, in Azure Active Directory, exist two user types, guest and member. If you join with the Microsoft 365, there is the license of before, you have this kind of user type, or depends about the age that you have, is called enterprise. And after, if you are using the Azure B2C, you can find the work consumer account. Is the account that joined from the other Active Directory. Okay, identity. You can have for the services. The services, remember, is the Azure services. You can have managed identity, where in system or user defined. I don't enter, my colleagues and teammates will enter in this short detail. Service principal or call application registration, and after the enterprise application. The two things change about the scope that they have and the connection that they can have. So this is the identity types that can be associated to one of the Azure services that you can create or you can manage. Application, my application. What is the identity type of my application? My application is my application because or I define the identity by the library, by the SDK that I can use to develop my application, or the application can inherit the identity of the service that the application is using to run. This concept is like a box. The service is the big box, the applications are the small box that run into the big box. The small box can have their own identity, they can inherit the identity of the big box. Devices. Okay, the device identity change about according to the registration method, the registration type. There is several and other more here. I just resume them to try to divide the desktop from the laptop and the desktop laptop from the mobile, because there are custom specific service and management about the mobile device, MDM, mobile device management. And after there are the normal method that you can use with the laptop or with the desktop that you have in the company you want to join to your Active Directory. Okay, how is working? Before, we see the regulation of this 4PI against the policy. So this is the as the identity access, how I can regulate the access for this 4PI. I show you in this graph how these 4PIs can be managed. These 4PIs can be associated to RSIs by this beautiful word, the BAC, role basic access control. Otherwise, this 4PI can have the scope on the Active Directory by the Active Directory rules. Easy. Why, Giorgio, why is different? I won't ask the same. This is the difference that we have over the management between the service and the feature that these four bad guys that you have coming in every day and all of the other stuff. This is the two tools or two framework, core framework is better, that you can use to monitor, to rule, manage and monitoring the policy and the association of them. You have a tool that is called, a feature, sorry, that is framework, that is called identity governance, that regulate these four guys in this direction. There is the tool to associate, manage, simulate, because when you create a policy, you associate to one of them, you want to be sure that when you click save and apply, everything go right. Otherwise, there is the policy and compliances tool that regulate the assets here. These two can work in the couple, and is the I say that in the real chapter framework model, otherwise I anticipate a lot of concepts. Okay, database and application. Until now, I show you, okay, what is the consideration of the Azure Active Directory, what is the identity, so who are the bad guys that try to enter in your Azure Active Directory in the wrong way, or try to force the access to have more privileges than normal. And now, I step into the real thing about the two normal modules, two normal things that you can manage, and that you manage every day in your IT company. The database, where the data are based, and your application. One of the questions that raised that in every meeting, webinar, conferences, Star Trek encounter, a meeting, or whatever, is how can I apply a secure development in my company? I know this, I use the example of this guy, developer. This is development. You need to consider database is SQL, application over there. The developer is the first guy that should be think about the security. Example, store the password in plain text in the database is not a good idea. Or allow that some kind of information transit on my between the internet and my application in the plain text or into the query string is not also a good idea. So, these five, okay, I create a sort of mapping of the subjects that a developer should be considered when plan the design or model for a database and when design or model his application. In design or model, implement or develop his database or his application. Sorry. Okay. How can we relate the access, the authentication to the database? There is two ways. First of all, the simple SQL authentication. When you create a database, you create also the admin of this database that rule over the database scope. Otherwise, in Azure Cloud, you can create or associate an Azure identity. I speaking about this. I am on death river. I can create as your identity or associate an existing one that allow my application to connect to my database. Why the and sometimes a lot of system that all the system admin ask me why I need to choose the Azure authentication. One, you, the capo, you divide the admin management, sorry, the database management into the identity management of the Azure. So the database is only a database, can have his own schema, and so the server can have his own database. And that's all. Stop. Think only about be a database server or be a database. The benefit of the Azure identity access and the permission management. George, what are the benefits of the identity access and permission management? Do you remember that? I'm speaking about that. I can rule that, for example, one application can connect to two databases, another application can connect it to one single database or zero database. The Azure Active Directory store for you the secret provide for you the secure storage for your password, your secret is the can be also the identifier token for the service principal, for the service principal, or otherwise you can choose to authenticate by the normal certificate token, because the Active Directory you re-authenticate by the OAuth2 interfaces of the Active Directory to have a transaction token and access here. Okay, data encryption. Encrypt your data. In Azure is completely transparent. They think about that and you don't need to think about nothing. They entrust the performance and the encryption and security about your data. Network restriction. Everyone can say that probably the production database should be not be accessible to the whole internet. So there is a SQL file, or you need to restrict the IP ranges to access to the database itself. You need to think about the encryption in transit, so the encryption of the connection. And Azure Synapse can give to you the analysis of the traffic, the connection, who is doing what, and what's happened. What are the status of your connection for your specific database or to the entire database block that you have. Okay, application. Again, the authentication. This guy here, so they enter in your application with your Azure user. You can connect by another OAuth Open Authentication version 2 system. By the OpenID Connect or by some social that is Facebook, Google, and Twitter. These are already provided to you. You can go in your application, click authentication, upload authentication. You have the list of that, you need to configure, stop, done, easy. After you have the free login interface, the authorization, if you want, can be managed in an Active Directory, otherwise, you can customize it by yourself. The role-based access control that is built upon the join of user group and application against Azure service. The game is these two, one of these two can be joined into the application, regulate the assets for the application, regulate the assets for the same Azure resource. And this role, this functionality, a allow you to regulate the integration of the connectivity among the system and among the other application. My secret are mine, totally mine. Cannot touch. So the key that you are using to connect to the other system in the possible Azure keyword or the HSM, hardware security modules. Probably the Azure keyword is your default choice. It is another one if you have, want to have more security. And as always, last and not the least, is the network restriction that you can have. There is you can choose an app service environment where Azure gives you a completely isolated environment only for you, only for your application. You can manage the IP restriction. You can create a WAF, an Azure web firewall. Or otherwise, you can have the network integration and use the normal firewalling of the virtual network in Azure, that is the network security group or the application security group. Different are the layer, the network, the manager, the stack, and the Azure ASG manage only the access to the application, not the kind of protocol of the application on the layer, on the last layer of the stack. Okay, this is what I skipped for. This is the summary of the Microsoft Cloud Adoption Framework for Azure. Someone, when I see this kind of thing, say, okay, I can skip it because I know I have my certification. I was wrong. It's better that I start to read something and I learn something new. And I refresh my knowledge, not about the news, but about some concept that I didn't think that was there. In my country, in Italy, we have a more leading expression, repetita iuvant. So repeat helps you. Azure Zero Trust Model. This is the abstraction of your identity, your endpoint. This is the Zero Trust Policy. What are the other subjects that I need to touch? Network, data, apps, infrastructure. They go in the check my threat protection, if it's 0-1, or check the policy optimization. After the Zero Trust Policy, here I have two main statements, evaluation and enforcement. So I evaluate if I am doing good, and if I'm not good, I go in a fourth step and I need to check. Okay, consideration. I am on the last two slides. Consider the requirements that you have against your Azure account. Regulate, consider the access management for your identity, the audience that you have, the permission that you give to your audience, the method to access, and the operation that you have to manage in your database or in your application. The security operation. Nicholas will go in the detail about this later, so I don't touch this argument. Okay, what is important for a secure development? This is what I say developer. These three guys, I don't know if you know, someone knows that. Short talk, short bits. Okay, this is Kevin Mitnick, this is Assange, and this is three of the top, most famous hacker. This guy hack some system, okay? But they start from the first feature point, the people. How many of you, when entering your company, like you have the door, you have the fingerprint, or you have the badge, don't check what's happening behind you. Here, you enter, you are not at all close. You enter, and you, sorry, in this direction, I open, I the badge at the fingerprint, clack. You listen. But you don't know if there is someone behind you. This is one of the examples that this guy used to hack some system. And the example that I use now, to close the door behind you. In some kind of private, sensible environment, the people are forced to do very close the door. Or there is one guy that have one specific rule. Check that the door is closed behind you and no one enters. Seems stupid that guys, but is not so stupid when you start to consider certain kind of security, company security, organization security. Okay, over there, monitor your alert and review enforcement. Put one guy, probably is required to check if your door is closed. When you enter. As your security best practice, you find pattern and pattern, best practice, architecture, tools, what you want there. The Zero Trust Center, please go take a look. And the cloud adoption framework that I told you that. No, Chan, you need to come here because I cannot read the from. Question. Chan, do you have a question from the other side of the world? Probably from far, far away.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay, I'm finished here. This is the QR code for the keep you updated the poster on our next meetup. Please go and check. Probably is the next one is not interest free, but next month can be. Now I suggest to give a huge applause to two of our union developers that I force madly probably. Okay, on our team. Ah, we have a break. Okay. Sorry, this is the access management that I don't have. You see, entrustment and enforcement. Okay, 15 minutes of break, so we can drink and we can eat.
Yes.
Chai, you allow me to eat. Why? Chai, it is not in my policy. Honestly, I never have this kind of permission. Is Giorgio eat the night? Okay. Please.
It might not be the questions, but I'm not an IT specialist for myself. Every 3 weeks, I have to share my password or everything on my account all the time. It's because there are hackers everywhere in the network. I'm not an IT specialist. I have to.
That's not the only thing.
My Twitter, my Facebook, even my bank account online. I have to change my password every 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's because you know they are hackers. They are everywhere in the network. Yeah, so I need an IT specialist to help me because all of my accounts belong to me. I have to change all the time. Sometimes I found that myself that it's an intruder. Unexpectedly trying to access my account, Facebook, Twitter, even my banking account to get information.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I give the same suggestions that I give
to you. Talking about the door, it's closed, someone behind,
I repeat what I said to my wife because we have in the family a common scenario. And sorry, and not only you need to change the password.
3 weeks. And all 3 weeks, everything
happened also to me.
And sometimes I forgot my previous one.
Yeah.
I have to change the new one. And then sometimes it's exactly the same as the
previous previous one.
Yeah,
yes.
The previous and previous one. Yeah.
Okay. Make your password strong, longer than 32. Use space. For a good suggestion is use a phrase, a sentence that is belongs to your favorite movie. For example, probably in your language, so you add the complexity of the language to your password. Sometimes I write in English, sometimes I write in my language, in Italian language. So the people need the
and myself have public life, I can speak.
Yeah, choose. Yeah. So okay, good, choose. You choose 3, 4, take, rotate that among all the languages that you have, and it's fine for you. Also my wife indeed chose Italian, English, and French. So it's also for her it's pretty fine. After, on your mobile, please see the application that runs when you open your bank application, for example. I don't have because I belong to the old generation, okay? Yeah. Check the application that run before to you open. Try to use the normal tool of freezing or hibernating the application that you doesn't want to run. For example, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Line, whatever. Okay. Freeze that. Okay, now I'm free to use that. One suggestion. Is closed. No one can enter. So this is the most safety box that you have. And there is this one of the strong muscle inside. Start to work. Make it training. Choose the sentence of the movie is one trick that I can suggest. Rotate among the language, rotate the different movie among the languages that you have. It's a good practice. And help you. Okay, it seems older, but works.
And apart from that, we have a tremendous number of incoming phone calls, messages, with their Facebook account, Twitter account, sending to me. Sometimes they put a profile or photo of a beautiful lady, Caucasian, but they find the time.
If you go on the YouTube, simple YouTube, and you check Kevin, you type Kevin Mitnick, he has a lot of video about that you go in the conference, security conference, and he show how simple attack your phone from the mobile network, the layer one, which is the network that you are using to call, that is the base. Yeah, he stop your messages, your call. After there is several tools that he can show. Online demonstration. So please go and check. Try to learn from this kind of free guide, free tutorial. Okay guys, the pizza is there, I guess. Yes, I can smell. So, thank you very much. Sorry, poor Mina, I introduced later, so we redo again. So in that way, it's their first time. So please, give them a warm introduction, okay? I asking you that. John, can I go to it? Police and trust me. Can I go to it? Okay. The judge say yes, I can go. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you very much. Okay. Those are two. They are junior. They start their journey in the computer science with us. They are full of discovery. I practice them every day. Fortunately for me, I practice them every day. I try to smile them. I have one request for you. Please use your hands to make a beautiful applause for them. Please.
Hello everyone. How's the pizza, by the way? Is it good?
Yeah.
I am Reed, and he is my friend's crew. So,
strange, I call in different way all the day.
Well, we have quite a similar size, so who can say? can we go to the next slide for me? So, as Jojo has give you a glimpse of our team members before, so here are our main team members. Here is a repeat. Can you go to the next one? Can you introduce yourself a little bit to our friends here, Poo?
Okay, that's with me. Okay, my name is Poo, and I'm a Julia.net developer. I just started in this industry last year on January. Thank you.
And hi again, everyone. I am Mean. Not that I am bad, but my nickname is Mean. Yeah. So I just started my career 2.5 years. I have been working in this IT industry both on the development side and also took some time for my first year of working as a consultant in IT industry as well. So yeah, that will be all about me. Okay, so today me and Poo are going to take you guys into the journey of Azure Functions, where it is a serverless applications that provided by Azure, where it helps you reduce the costs and stuff, and you can forget about like managing the resources stuff because it can be managed for you. So the first thing that I will introduce you guys is the high level concept of what Azure Functions is, and then I will continue to pass on the topics to Poo to give you guys the introductions of what these, how to secure Azure Functions in transit, and then I will close up with the how to secure Azure Functions at rest. So starting with the first one, which is the high level concept of Azure Functions. So when you think about Azure Functions, we can think of two things. The first one is triggers. I will put it this way. Let's think of Azure Functions like a car, and you want to start a car so that it can run and take you anywhere you would like to go. So triggers to Azure Functions is like a key that you use to start a car. Yeah. And for each Azure Functions, you can have only one trigger type. I will dig down onto trigger types later on, but let me explain a little bit more on bindings. Another concept that you can think of when you work on Azure Functions is how can you send the data from other data points into Azure Functions, or how can you write any data out from Azure Functions to other Azure services. That is the bindings. Yeah. And right here, I am showing you guys how to configure the triggers of Azure Functions. So in 7Peaks, we normally use C#.NET. So what you can see here are the C# attributes that you can use on to set up the triggers of the Azure Functions. And also the Java, I would say is kind of have a similar concept to what we did in C#, because if you want to set up or configure Azure functions for Java development, you can use Java annotations, which have a similar naming to C sharp. And if you want to configure Azure functions in other programming languages, there is this beautiful function.json that you can take as a reference to set up all the configurations related to Azure functions. And this JSON file, you can also configure or edit it on Azure portal. You don't need to write it yourself. You can just go into Azure portals and edit this file. And now I present you the trigger types that we can think of on a day-to-day basis, because there are much more trigger types in Azure functions, but I just choose the 6 types that we can think of. The first one is HTTP trigger type. This type of visual functions will get triggered whenever there is an HTTP request comes in. And the second one is the block trigger type, where these visual functions will get executed or invoked whenever there is an create or updates to the block storage. And the next one is the event hot trigger type, which will get invoked or executed whenever we have any events comes into the Azure event hot. And the third one is the time trigger type, is the Azure functions that will get executed or invoked whenever the time schedules is reached, or let's say if they want to save any cache data into Redis on 45 minutes time interval, we can consider using this Azure functions time. And the fifth one is the queue trigger type, where it is an Azure functions that will get invoked or executed when there is any queue comes into Azure queue. Yeah. And the last one is the Azure Cosmos trigger type, which will get executed whenever there is a change in the document that we have in the Azure Cosmos database. That are the 6. And now we will go to the bindings. So in Azure Functions Universe, we have 2 binding types. The first one is output binding. It means that we want to connect our Azure functions to the data destination, which in the other words means that we want to write something to other Azure services. And the second type is the input binding, which means that we want to connect our Azure functions to the data source, like when we want to read something from the Azure storage block. And I will give you an example of what are the triggers and bindings when we use it all together. So let's say this is a practical example, because we actually did this before in one of our projects. So if we start with, let's say that is a situation that that is a user that wants to request for a room availability of this condominium.
And
so they click on the website, right? They request for the room availability, and then we have this control functions as a HTTP trigger type, where it will be executed when the user has chose to request for a room availability, and then it will. This control function will get triggered and tries to send the data from the user to our back office team by using SendGrid. And then our back office will get the email back from this process. And that will be all that about the high level concepts on control functions. And now I am passing on my stage to Poo to introduce you guys to the security in transit of assured functions.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so now we know about all the concept, and we are going to talk about the security, so which is our main topic here. So. For security in transit is the is how the Azure protect your Azure function. So there are four types of the topic. First one is the function access key. It's the key that you can to secure your function, and it has many level of the key. And it will be signed by the authorization scope. The third one is the authentication and authorization of the, your Azure function. And the last one is about the networking. So let's see about the access key first. The access key, we have three main types. The first one is function keys. Function keys you can use to define which key can have an access to which function. It's kind of like a many-to-many relation. So each function can also have many keys assigned to it. The second one is host keys. Host keys is basically a key that you can use to access any function in your function app. So the host key can separate into two subtypes. The first one is the normal host key, which by itself is can access any function. The second one is master key. The master key is like the admin level key. You can use that to access an entire API for the admin. The third one is system keys. The system keys is used by your function to access the address. And I will show you. But now let's see about the scope. First, of course, we have the most basic one, anonymous scope. Anyone can use, you don't need any key. Let's use under unsecure function. The second one is the function scope. This one is for the secure function that you already assign a key to the function. And the third one is the admin level. It is only allowed for the master key only. And it can be used to access the Azure function admin endpoint. Like you can see the logs, you can see the status, you can see the token key. You can see the admin token for the key. So here is a summary of the key and authorized scope. If you want to execute the function, you can use two keys. It's function keys and the host keys. If you want to use the admin endpoint, you have to use the host key. But only the master key. If you want to call the other service from the function, like if your function has a trigger of event hub, you need the subscription key into the system key for your function. So we have a lot of keys. So where are we going to store it? The first one is the Azure File System. It is the default repository for the Azure Function version 1, but now they already changed into the second one, which is Azure Blob Storage, which is the default one right now. And you can also store your key in the key vault. And if you deploy your function via Kubernetes, you can use the Kubernetes secret to store your keys. Now, the keys can prevent your function from the access, from the unwanted access. But in the real world, your function have many users, and each user has full authentication and authorization to your function. So basically, you can use the Azure Active Directory. This can provide you an integration of the other provider, like Google, Facebook, or any OpenID provider. You also can combine it with the Azure API management to help your secure more for your function. And yeah, and the last one is the networking. Actually, we have many networking way to secure your function. This is one of the basic one that I suggest is you can use your Azure Virtual Network and to secure your function inside the network. And use the Azure Private Endpoint to point into the network. And you can connect with the API management to access the endpoint and to your Azure function in the network. If other user try to use your function directly, it can be possible. And that's all for the security in transit. Now we're going to talk about the security at rest.
Thank you, Poo. So we are moving on to the last sections for me and Poo, which is the security at rest for Azure functions, which we will basically talk about how can we secure the binding process of Azure functions. So talking about security at rest of Azure functions is what we are going to talk about. What I just speak. So is this how to can we secure the input and output bindings that to send the data to Azure functions, and how can we secure the data that comes out of our Azure functions. But the big question here for some of you that might not know like me before is that what exactly is this identity-based security? Yeah. So the identity-based security, or in other words, in Azure universe where it calls managed identities, is the how we can get our Azure services secure without thinking of how can we keep our connection stream securely by ourselves, but let Azure manage for us. So there are main two types of these managed identities. The first one is system assigned. This is the type of managed identities that will stay valid to the lifecycle of Azure services. and it cannot be shared across other parties. But for the user assigned managed identities, we can share these identities with other parties, and it is standalone, which means that it's not tied to the application lifecycle. And just to give you an example, how can we apply this identity-based security at rest? So the example scenario is that if we want to connect our virtual functions with the storage blob, which is another Azure service, we can, so if we, for me, I didn't know about this identity base before, so I used to just passing the connection string of this Azure blob storage into our Azure functions. But then after I have learned that if we set up these managed identities on Azure and we use it inside our Azure functions, we don't have to worry about how can we keep this connection string of the Azure blob storage secure by ourselves anymore. And we can just let our Azure functions manage all of that, and we can upload any image through our Azure blob storage right away. That will be all of this stuff that we would like to present to you guys today. Thank you so much, and are there any questions?
Okay. So last session for tonight, DevSecOps with Azure and migration with EF6. So first, I'm a cloud architect on Azure, AWS, and GCP. I started with Java and now more with .NET C Sharp. Okay, so let's start with more context. So DevOps. So what do we want to do? So recently, or not recently anymore, we start to have this kind of agile mindset, agile thinking, where we try to deliver values to our end customer like quickly, rapidly, with like a short feedback loop. And we want to have also like to give more flexibility and inputs to the team so they can build quickly, faster, get feedback and push to production and then iterate over this and not wait like, for example, 10 years, 5 years to push something to production. Here you have like some principles of the Agile Manifesto, so you can check on their website. But basically, just a short feedback loop and getting feedback from the customer and improving the process during the implementation. So this kind of loop that we have actually can be used on anything. Like for example, if I'm working with Giorgio, Min, or Pooh, I'm working on something with them and I want to improve myself, I will ask them to give me like feedback. So first I ask them like, do you have to say anything to me where I can like improve or anything? Maybe they can say like, you talk too much, you don't work enough. After I need to analyze and yeah, maybe act on it and then just iterate over and over. So that's basically the DevOps. So DevOps is not a position, it's not a role, even if some companies advertise DevOps position, it's not really a role. So DevOps is more a set of practices that try to combine like the dev and the operation together. So for this, they try to bring as a team like all the benefits and all their knowledge together. So when you are on a dev team, you implement the software and you are writing the code. But then how do you push this code to production? And that's where the operation team is good at, is like to send this code to production or any environment. So what we start to see in some companies and pipeline is like the dev team write the code and then we have two branches in our Git, main and develop. And then we have a pipeline to deploy to the dev environment and a pipeline to deliver to production. So that's a good start, I want to say. So we push a code and then it's normally flowing across and delivered to your dev environment and production. The thing here is when you push to the develop branch, we build an artifact. We run some integration test or any kind of test can be also performed with the QA team. Then we deploy this artifact to our dev environment. And the same thing happens when we want to go to production. We take the code, we build it, probably we run some tests, and we deploy to production. The thing here is, maybe when you build the code, sometimes, because this process does not happen at the same time. So the output, the artifact are basically different. And this can cause some issue to production because let's say I have a QA team that validates or I have anyone that can validate this artifact into the dev environment. Actually, when I rebuild, I will have another artifact. And this one has not been validated. So yeah, so this diagram is like more for the DevOps part, where we try to improve the feedback loop and try to deliver faster to combine dev and ops. Then, now, what we are doing at Eventix as well, is we take the code, we only have one branch, and we build only once the code, and we store this artifact. And then we deploy it to dev, and then to production. We will see in Azure DevOps a bit later. And yeah, this one is like really splitting the build part from the release part. And to have this kind of pipeline, it's still DevOps, but a slightly improved way of doing it. And this needs to be discussed with both devs and operation team. So Azure DevOps actually, it's like a separated module from Azure. So this one you can go, you just type Azure DevOps on Google and you will find this. So this is a UI where we have like the build pipeline and the release over here. So here you can see, when you click on it, you can see your pipeline, and you can write in a YAML file what does it steps, like check out the code, build the code, run some coverage, some test, and then push your artifact in a repository. And then you also have on the second tab, this one is a release pipeline. So basically, you in here, you would be able to define like take an artifact from the previous step and then deliver to dev. And then on special conditions, you can say deliver to production. And you can have like a view and see like this is a artifact ID and see, or this artifact is deployed to, was deployed in dev, and now it's in production. And the next one is in dev and waiting for approval in production. So this one, these kind of things, at Synaptix actually we don't really have like DevOps, so it's managed by the team. Could be backend, architect, frontend, and they can manage all the deployments and the writing of the code and the implementation. So it's like really having the mindset, I want to bring more value to the customer, I want to do it quickly, and I will do whatever is required to have this kind of short feedback loop. This one is a bit more detailed when you click on it. You just reminder, artifact ID, deployed in dev, and here you have an approval. So for example, for some projects, some people are assigned just to know and to be aware when an artifact will go to production. So maybe now it's more for the developers. So now in this kind of diagram, actually we are moving the code. But the question is, what happened to my database? And how can I update? Like the columns, the name of the tables, or how can I add table if at the end I build one, but I need to deploy into locations. So what we have actually is a new functionality of Entity Framework. So you have two ways to run your migration script. So before, you can run your migration script with the code. So you need to take your .NET project and run the EF framework, and then you will be able to do the migration. But in EF6, actually what you can do is to, in your pipeline, install the .NET EF CLI, and there is a specific command, EF migrations bundle. And then you specify the name of your project and an output, and they will generate for you an executable that you will be able to run later on. And this is just a small example. And you don't need to have the code anymore. So it's a really standalone migration script. So when we do this, actually, we at the end of this pipeline, we just take the code and the artifact generated to the DLL and the migration script will bundle and zip everything, and then you will go back to this part, will generate migration script and the code, and then we can send it first to dev and then to production. So this is the next step. So before we generated the script, and now in a release pipeline, you just run first your migration, and here is like it's really small. We just executing the executable, and then we deploy. So just a quick tip. So there is two ways to do it. Basically, at the beginning, on some project, what we do is we migrate the databases when the application starts. This has small disadvantages, is like, because sometimes what we want is to have more than one container in production, or it's like when we have high volume, we want more than one instance. So this migration script should not run on three, for example, three of the instances that we have in prod. the migration script should be only run once. And sometimes some migrations may take some time. When I say may take some time, it can take 1 hour. So it's always a good practice to do this actually migration in a release pipeline and not at the startup of your project. And even you can stop the deployment if the migration does not pass. So you run your migration first and after you deploy. So this is like a way how to secure your pipeline on the DevOps side. Then this is a part. So So in this part, what we have is like a developer team, QA team, and ops. So this part can be roughly summarized as a DevOps, but actually this, those people also interact with all the teams. They don't interact often or from time to time, and there is the one security team, compliance team, design team, and other teams. But the one where we focus is security team, because they are also part of the implementation, or at least technical guys. So they will tell you how to build your system so it can be done in a secure way. So what they did is they give this name DevSecOps to kind of like combine all the practices under one name. So this is also to just come back to the beginning. So security team is like you don't see them often, and they always come to see you when you need to deliver to production, 1 week before actually, which is sometimes a little bit late. We can try to include them at the early beginning of the project. Ask them, what are the requirements? What do you want us to do? How do you want us to do it? And then we can work as a team and improve the previous pipelines that we saw to include some checks at different stages of the implementation. And and the next one is, So this one is a checklist from Microsoft. So basically, they say what we just discussed is bringing everybody together into one team. Just check your permission in your, in your CI/CD pipeline, because actually this pipeline deploying the code may, but and may also update the infrastructure. So this pipeline has some kind of like, sometimes, I hope not often, but one permission to, for example, create Kubernetes clusters like Min and Poo talked about this, or create load balancers, or create a bunch of VMs. So keep your CI/CD pipelines in Azure DevOps or others really secure and tight, because actually it's the first point that would fail in your security system. And this is a location where nobody really check anything because of laziness. So check your CI/CD, the role and the permission. This one is quality gate. So this one is like more the approval when you want to deploy to, for example, I showed one for production. So you can have quality gate for when we validate the code, we check the structures, the style. If it doesn't pass, it's a fail, and then you need to repush again, and they will block your deployment to any environment. Or quality gate could also be like manual approval by someone. And last one is more for infrastructure. We can talk about this one, could be a separate topic. Where we have this kind of infrastructure update in CI/CD pipeline, which we do as well. And this we need to be careful because this can be really expensive. So this one is for showing you like for the DevSecOps part. Actually, if you your infrastructure or know how your application is and deployed. So this one is one of the stack. Min and Poo presented like serverless function. So they don't have this part because this part is managed by Azure. So on the code part, you have some tools for scanning, like for scanning statically your code. So Nordcube or other tools can scan and say, oh, you may have like security issues, or you may hard code some password here. So please check and update the code. When you build containers, actually your cloud provider on Azure, they will scan the containers, the Docker images, and tell you, like, for example, this version is like outdated. Something inside this container is has a security vulnerability. So, yeah, they will send you feedback on this. So these kind of things are checked each step of the pipeline that you configure. So code container. For the orchestration, if you use like Kubernetes, you have like some linters and some checkers that will advise you like on how to configure. Did you like provision like any old containers? Does the configuration seem weird? You don't, for example, configure like the resource request. And these kind of things. And the last one is more infrastructure. You have like some tool like TFSec or Anki, where they can advise you like, oh, you open all your infrastructure to the internet and all your SSH ports are open. So please check and do something about this. Or they will also any kind of infrastructure related or any open services on the internet. So yeah, that's what your security team may ask you to check. And yeah, just it happened often, they just ask you 1 week before going back. And yeah, any question? Nobody? Min, Poo, and Giorgio. And Seven Pigs for the pizza.
Now you can go to eat and drink the beer. I close, you close, you close, okay, I close. Okay, that's it. Nicola was the last of us. We say thanks to you. To follow us by the remote guy that watched the streaming, by you that came here in the office. This is the event ends here. Please stay, follow us on our social media, stay tuned, stay connected, scan the QR code. Now can scan the QR code for the next meetup. Please. Join, let us know your feedback, and as Nicolas described, it is very important for us, and I say thanks you again. Bye. Ciao.
Okay.